Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Of all the job security questions we have, of all the major sports in the U.S., is there anyone more secure than Bob Myers and Steve Kerr?
Belichick.
Yeah, and you're on a short list,
but
though,
like,
right?
I just came up with the one that might be the only one. It's like Belichick. We're talking just professional sports?
Professional sports, GMs, coaches, and managers. Who has more security than Kerr and Myers? Belichick is right.
Gruden.
Yeah, well, nice. With the 10-year deal, I suppose.
Gruden's not going anywhere. Like, Gruden might have more security than Belichick.
It's pretty good. I mean, we could go through for the next 15 or so minutes.
Now security more.
It'd be tough to find. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find. I mean, Masai Ujiri right now in Toronto, you'd put him up on the short list after what he did.
It's a great question.
Great.
Because if you work your way through it, I mean, I'm not going to be familiar enough. I'd say the staff in Vegas for the hockey team, because the first 2 years have gone so well for them.
Derek Jeter.
Professional only. Saban's a great one.
Yeah.
Jeter's an owner. I thought we're just doing that.
Oh, right. I was just trying to work him in.
Based on your question.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to work him in the program. Oh, you with the college coach? I clearly laid it out.
All right, so GMs and coaches with the most security. That's good. That's really good.
That's really good.
Belichick, I mean, of course.
Yeah,
and then,
like you said, Gruden.
Gruden, yeah. Those would be the two. But to your point, Myers and Kerr, top of the food chain with
right.
them. If they're not up there on the same tier, it's like the... You know, the step right below. Like, if it were Mount Everest, you'd be shoving other climbers down to get to the top. You're that close. Because that's what goes on Everest these days, if you see the photos.
It is
Everyone's
disgusting.
Just fighting each other to get to the top.
Disgusting,
there's too many
coach.
People on the mountain, coach. It's a line at Disney World now to get to the top. I'll show you it. It's a picture. It's like dozens of people lined up.
It will make you so sad.
Try to climb up the mountain.
People are leaving.
No, not to climb up. At the top to get up on top. In this death zone where you only have so much time to survive with your oxygen, shoving each other to the ground so they can get up there to get their photos, summit, and then get back down in time. They're fighting each other. There's so many of them trying to get to the top. It's become a tourist attraction.
Seriously, Disneyland, and there's no fast pass either. Mm-hmm. We're going to climb between 12 and 2 today. It is disgusting if you see it. Anyway, Greg Popovich was a name thrown
out.
Who
thought the anti-Mount Everest takes were coming in today?
Yeah, you know.
It's good stuff.
Everest is overrated. Seriously, what's the point? If you can't get up there on your own, then don't even bother.
So they helicopter them up to a certain point, and then they're...
No. They're climbing the mountain. They start from base camp,
okay.
But you have so many people who want to do this now because they want to say they did it. And there have been books written about it. There are TV shows on it, so it's been glamorized. So what you do is you have these really rich people who invest a ton of money to have camp set up for them, Sherpas, guides, people tracking weather. And so many people are doing this now that when you only have a handful of days per year that you can summit Everest. It's a small, small window. And even then, you might not get the day. So when you get the day that the weather's going to be okay, everyone's bum rushing for it. And then you see a line. There's this famous picture that's been circulating the internet from the summit past the Hillary step all the way. It's like 150 people lined up waiting to get up there. And they're starting to panic because this is a death zone. You can't be at that altitude for that long. Their oxygen's running out. So they start shoving each other to get past each other so they can climb to the top to say they did it.
It's a foot race, coach.
I bet you right now, no, you don't see many of my people in that line. That's
ex-NFL fullbacks?
I don't know, churchgoers?
what people are you talking about? I don't want to speculate.
Say it. Just
no,
saying.
No, I don't want to say it.
No.
What's wrong with you? Although he says that, I think to myself.
Right.
Maybe people from the Moo?
Tries to get an indirect shot at you there.
That
as
was
you
great.
Make a nice
She's
joke that
so
everyone supports.
Funny.
Look at you.
Right,
coming out
right.
of left field
was,
to stab him in the side.
Yeah, nice two-piece. Top rope.
That's tough.
Dibs, you love that, though. You can appreciate
great.
That. Both you guys looked at me like... shaking your head.
I have to check the photos for confirmation.
But. This should have been 9 o'clock hour where you guys have been shaking your head like, okay, he's got a point there.
Shout out the live stream.
To somehow bring your joke about Everest to Everest back to Durant, Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN's Get Up this morning saying that in his opinion, he doesn't see Kevin Durant opting in with the Warriors at a price of $31.5 million as his top option. He thinks it's way down the line and it's not going to happen. It's just him. It's not a report. It's not according to sources, but he is the most connected guy in the business. So if he has an opinion on something, you certainly want to listen to it. He's not going to just throw stuff up against the wall. That's not what Woj does. So there's the option of signing with another team 4 years, $164 million, or re-signing with the Warriors 5 at $221.3 million. I don't know how he's going to prioritize it because I don't know what his relationship is with the training staff and everyone at Golden State right now. I think you raise an excellent point. I do know that if you are going to try to come back from an injury that is extraordinarily difficult to come back from, example, Boogie Cousins, the best course of action to getting back to the Kevin Durant we all know and love in terms of production on the court is going to be the most favorable recovery schedule possible. And there is no recovery schedule that will be more favorable than right here with the Golden State Warriors. You could take all of next year off. All of next year off. There is no other team in the NBA that's going to allow that to happen. The team might say it's okay. The fan bases will not. You sign with the Knicks, Knicks fans are going to be counting down the days. Remember how we were with Boogie. And we didn't even need to be like that. We knew Boogie Cousins was an embarrassment of riches for us. We knew they could take his time. We made the jokes, just dust him off in the last month, get him ready for the playoffs. He wanted to play and then we got all antsy. Well, we want to see him by Christmas. What's the holdup? Why is it going into January? And that was completely unnecessary for a fan base that already had Durant and Steph and Klay and Draymond. Everything was fine. And we still tried to speed that up. Now imagine you're the Knicks fan base. You've had no success for 20-some years. You just missed out on the number one pick, so you're not getting Zion Williamson. Kyrie Irving's not coming to town. It looks like he wants to go to Brooklyn. So this might be your last great chance. And somehow you throw four at 164 at Durant, and he says yes. That fan base is not going to be cool saying, yeah, it's all right. Take the year off. We'll see you next year. No, they're going to count down the months, and if the timetable for the return is March, they're going to want to see him in March. And if they don't, there's going to be pressure. You think the New York media is going to be cool about that?
What do you think?
No way. The New York Daily News yesterday, what was the headline? Knicks lose game five. Yeah. That was the headline. Knicks lose game five.
And if they do sign him, what's the headline going to be? Knicks get damaged goods. Is Durant, is this a, re, you know.
The, I think it's just the start of the rebuild for the Knicks because you're going to get R.J. Barrett, most likely, with the number three overall pick, the kid out of Duke, who I think is the best player in the draft. Apologies to Zion and Ja Morant. And then next year, you're likely going to be a lottery team again because you're not going to be very good and KD won't play. So you take KD with R.J. Barrett and a top five pick potentially again next year. All of a sudden, the Knicks rebuild gets jump-started a little bit. But Joe's right, about the Knicks fan base. They will have that marked in their calendar, and the day that time goes by, 9 months or whatever it is, it's, come on, KD, why aren't you out there?
Exactly. You're going to be feeling that pressure for what? To go back and carry the Knicks to 31 wins at the end of the season? If you stay here, and I'm not advocating for it, I'd love to see it. Obviously, the decision's going to be his. He's earned it. But you could open up Chase Center. You could play zero games next year. If you go back through the history of Achilles injuries to NBA players, there's one guy that provides optimism. Dominique Wilkins. Wilkins was roughly the same age. I got the data right here. 91-92 season, he played 42 games, suffered the injury. Came back the next season to play 71 games. He averaged, before the injury, 28.1 points per game. Came back to average 29.9. Field goal percentage went from 46.4 to 46.8. Player efficiency rating, 22.2 up to 24.3. He actually came back and was a little bit better, but that's it. You go through the history of Achilles injuries to NBA players, especially bigger players, it is not
favorable.
Something to get excited about. Right. It is very daunting. And you're seeing it right now with DeMarcus Cousins, and it's sad and it's unfortunate. And Wilkins' age when he came back from the injury is right around where Durant would be. If you'd have the full year to take off, assuming you'd want to do that, the full year, nobody here is going to get antsy.
Right.
Right? Is there?
Right.
You might have an idiot towards the end of the season, you get close to the playoffs, like, look, I know we said take the year off, but you got to come back. It's you're on the precipice here. But after everything we just watched this year in the finals, I don't see that being a majority.
This is the most favorable place for him for his time. You're absolutely right, Joe.
And Chetta.
And I think also it's a situation where he'll be on a pitch count. Even when he comes back, they talked about the minutes and some of the minutes and stuff that he logged. It's a situation, if he goes to New York and those other places, they're going to expect this guy to carry their teams. They're going to expect him to be the face and be there. Here, he doesn't have to necessarily carry. So when you're coming off an injury like this, just like with Boogie, you didn't have to carry. Kevin Durant still can be a huge part of this team. But even if he comes back a year and a half from now, he doesn't won't be in a situation where it's all about Kevin Durant. If he goes elsewhere, that will be that will be the narrative.
Quick side note, you can file this under terrifying things you wouldn't want to have to experience. The Willis Tower in Chicago, formerly known as, what was it, the Sears Tower?
Yeah.
When the tallest building or second tallest building in America. I don't know what it is these days. They have that observation deck at the top if you've ever been there. And you have a ledge, a clear ledge that you can step out to where you can look straight to the ground. And it's completely clear as you look out of the city. I've been up there. It's beautiful. Visitors were standing on the clear floor where you look down and see the earth. It cracked. It spider cracked across while they were standing there. No one fell. No one's hurt. Didn't break. But I'm looking at a picture of the spider crack going the clear ground. The protective layer of the sky deck ledge cracked under visitors' feet. Could you imagine if you were standing there? Look, because that's what you do. You go out and you look down and it just goes straight down to the city. City streets.
My God.
You're standing out over the world, and it just cracks underneath you.
I'd have been just out of hollow Jesus. And just, you know, you see that thing crack, and you feel it. What are you doing?
Well, it's only about 3 feet. So what you do is you just turn around, and you take one step back, and you're fine. Right? It's not like the Titanic where it's like, all right, maybe in 12 hours a boat gets here. It's you crack, yeah, you jump back, and you go,
close. You say something. You don't
have to say a prayer and then, you know, God, please give me the strength to take one step back.
You're like Jesus as you're jumping back or whatever you're going to say.
I'm throwing my body back in the children. That's without question.
You ain't just looking down.
No big deal. It's just another day at the office.
Okay.
No big deal.
Okay. No big deal. If you fall, then you reach out, you grab something. You don't plummet to your death.
Oh, sure. So easy.
And if you do happen to plummet all the way down, there's worse ways to die, to be sure. I mean, it's got to be. Then, you know, plummeting 97 floors, that probably doesn't even hurt when you land. 130?
Yeah, 103rd. 103.
That's fine. By the time you hit the ground, coach, it's already
but those
over.
Few seconds are that you're plummeting are probably just awful.
Just
like, absolutely awful.
I spend those seconds apologizing to Lo for all the rough treatment. I'm sorry, Lo! Well done.
Didn't you have a trivia question for us?
I do, yeah. I'd like to turn the tables here and have the three of you be teammates as we do a little our inner Fortenbaugh over here. Hello, everybody. Hello, friends. Joe,
you
know
seem nervous. Are you nervous asking this trivia question?
It's a
pretty simple concept.
I'm a little nervous right now. I'm a little nervous. Kevin Durant is number 31 all-time in scoring as he sits. We know he's going to miss a year, but among active players, those players who played this past season, he is currently sixth on the all-time scoring list. Can you name the five players active in the NBA as of 2018-2019 who are above Kevin Durant on the all-time points list? I'll give you...
This isn't like a postseason thing. This is just all-time
regular
scoring.
Regular season, all-time scoring.
So Lou Alcindor's at the top of that list. Karl Malone's what, two?
That's correct.
And there are five guys that have more points scored than him. Well, number one's... The King.
Yeah, MJ.
We're all going to go with the King. No, not MJ. You got to give us a chance to get. He yelled MJ as we're saying LeBron.
Oh, you said LeBron. You got to go with the King.
Active players. But it has to be a team thing. Now I can see why this is such a problem.
Welcome to
guys that are playing right now.
Yeah. LeBron James.
LeBron James.
Yeah, you got LeBron.
You said how many above Durant?
There are five above Kevin Durant. LeBron James is number four all-time in scoring in the National Basketball Association.
Wade retired this year, but you got to look at him, Dirk.
Do him and Dirk count?
Mm-hmm. Players who were active during 2018-2019.
So which one would you like to go with? Nowitzki?
Yes.
Nowitzki?
Yep.
Nowitzki.
Nowitzki, he's number six all time. So you've gotten two of the five players. These are five players above Kevin Durant on the all-time scoring list.
And Wade's do we get any swings and misses here?
Yeah, we'll give you two swings and misses. On the third one, strike 16, three, you're
Wade's
out.
Wade's played 16 years. So the
I'm with you there as well.
Totally.
D-Wade.
D-Wade, number 29 all time. He's just barely above KD. You need two more players active in 18-19, who are above KD on the all-time scoring list.
I think Vince Carter, Joe, played 40 till he's 41 years old. I would go with Vince.
He's just, if he scores two points a night, he's probably right behind Abdul-Jabbar with the amount of years he's put in. Very good. I'm with that.
Go.
Vince Carter.
Oh, Vince Carter. Yeah. Sure.
All right, guys, I'm done. I've done my job.
See?
You're doing a tremendous job. You're leading the way. You're leading the way. I can't believe this is not coming to me easier.
I mean, I know. I'm trying to think if James Harden has enough, maybe. I don't think Harden's gotten there yet.
No, I don't think it's needs one more. We just need the aging guys.
You've got four guys. You need one more. They're looking for five active players who've scored more points than Kevin Durant.
In this situation, I just go team by team and I start working it through.
Right, I don't know what you're saying.
But I can't do that. We don't have enough time. So I'm thinking, who are the Legacy X playing with LeBron this year? Was there another old guy on that team? It's an old guy somewhere.
We already said Visky.
It is a radio program, you three.
Yeah, we know.
Do your Sesame Street sing-along.
It's so fun getting to be a part of this and just not talk and wait.
I'm just trying to think of all the different teams here now.
Let's go with Timmy Duncan.
Oh, he's not.
He doesn't play anymore.
Not Tim, but Tony Parker.
Oh, Tony Parker.
Look at you. I'll side with that.
You going to go with Tony Parker?
Just retired.
That's strike one.
That's a great guess.
That is a great guess.
God, Tony played 15, 16 years. God, who else would be?
Jamal Crawford.
As you look at the text line and just read it off, I saw that as well. Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, he was still on there. Yeah, active.
Carmelo.
Yes, very good, Joe.
I read it from the text line. Oh. Wow. What do you mean? Oh, we got it. Yeah. He didn't say we couldn't. He had an opportunity to lay out his rules. He laid them out in lazy fashion. He got nervous, and he created an opportunity for us to beat the system.
Joe makes it sound so good, too. That's what I love when he's defending on your side.
The worst is he called me out on it. He called me out on it instead of working as a team here.
Because here's what happened on the text line.
You literally were contributing nothing. You were just agreeing with Lowe, as I was. But I was doing a lot of pomp and circumstance, so it looked like I was a part of it. Mm-hmm. You have to just throw words out there. And you were just saying yes.
You have to throw out a lot of words
to make it seem like you're part of it. Like Lowe would say, Dirk Nowitzki, oh, that sounds so good because you want old guys who have been around for a while. He did play. I'm not adding anything to the equation, but because you hear the words, it feels like I'm a part of it. Then you come in and go, yeah, I agree. And it doesn't look good.
So when I said
it's literally the same thing I'm doing,
but you have to just vomit
a bunch of words out there because it sounds like you're a part of it.
He's like, Vince, you know, he averaged two a night. Vince been playing. Right. That was good.
It's just garbage. Right. If I say enough words, eventually people will be like, Fornball got all those. Lowe is just riding his tails. You could completely corrupt the system just by spewing garbage everywhere.
And you
just
made
watch
me feel,
politics.
You made me feel better when you were saying it. I was like,
Didn't you feel confident? And I wasn't saying anything. I wasn't giving you any reasons. Oh, Dwayne Wade. Of course, Dwayne Wade. Here's why. He's old. It's like that doesn't make any. There are lots of old people out there. They're not out there scoring points. Great job, though, by you. You were knocking that out of the park there.
Lucky.
Dibs, next time, come up with something tougher.
Right.
What a joke. Wow. Joke of a trivia question. We're one for one on Dibs questions.
Where's Zach Randolph in then? He was not even.
Ask the text line. They'll give you the answer.
Yeah. Text line.
Y'all can't even survive one question without cheating.
No one cheated. You did not lay out the rules properly.
It was obviously part of the moral fiber of a trivia question is to not lean on the text. But that's okay. I see how you guys roll.
It was your trivia question. You can lay it out however you like.
You didn't lay out the rules.
Or you laid out the rules. There were no rules.
Right.
We beat it.
The three of you working together. And you go to the text line.
We're one for one. See, this is a team right here. This is a team. And now what you have to do is you have to figure out the common denominator. You remove Dibs from the equation, suddenly everything starts working out.
I got to start checking the text line. Apparently, that's how we do it now.
That was a lot harder than it should have been. That was a lot harder than it should have been.
The trick question is Carmelo Anthony because you forget he played this year. He played 12 games.
Still, the idea. I was completely blank on Wade and Nowitzki as well. That should have been so much easier than it was. You set that the way that was set up and.
Personally, it's always tough on
no
the other
way
side.
I would have figured that out. No way.
If Carmelo's the one that
Carmelo was out and out. Yeah,
it seems like it's been years since he actually played.
All right,
that's good.
Good stuff. Good work. Tore each other down a little bit. Built each other up a little bit. Classic Wednesday here on 95.7 The Game.
Classic.
Your hand was up. Did you have?
No, not at all. Just saying. That's what we do.
All right.
That's how the show rolls.
You can always hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. We love you all. Thank you very much for all the answers
to those questions.
Warrior playoff coverage. On 95.7, The Game, presented by our friends at Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. The update on Durant, what's next for Durant, what's next for the Warriors. Honestly, over the next 3 years, including this postseason, do you see them winning a title? Doesn't even matter. Steph Curry was addressing that after Game 5. It really puts things in perspective. We're going to hammer all that next. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. And the reminder of all reminders, next, hang with us, because the first Warrior name is going to be announced for your chance to win tickets to Game 6 of the NBA Finals. You're not going to want to miss this. You're not going to find a better prize anywhere on radio, anywhere in this country. I guarantee it. Game 6 tickets, your first chance is next. But first, here's Anna with what's coming up on The Game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Hint Water. It's the countdown to the final game at Oracle Arena, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Warriors vs. Raptors. Toronto holds a 3-2 series lead. And we are giving away a pair of tickets to the final game in Oakland. That's coming up next. Now, here's how it works. We're going to announce the first Warrior player name right after the break. Then we'll give out additional player names today at 11:30, 2:30, and 5:30. We'll ask you for all four of those names tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m., but you need all four of those names in order to win. So again, you need all four. Go listen at right after the break at 7:30, 11:30, 2:30, and 5:30. But coverage of Game 6 will start tomorrow with Warriors Live at 4:30 right here on 95.7 The Game, and we are still waiting on the results from Kevin Durant's MRI on his Achilles. Keep it locked on 95.7 The Game for the latest updates. Can the Splash Brothers and the Warriors core get it done and keep the finals rolling? Pop and Bonte will ask ESPN's Michael Wilbon at noon, and head coach Steve Kerr will join the Dame Bruce Show today at 5. Coming up, who will be the Warriors' X Factor tomorrow? The guys will discuss. I'm Anna Kagadakis on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowenditz continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome to The Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you. Our beautiful listening audience, because we love you and because we have several items on the docket that we are very excited to get into on this Warrior Wednesday, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Shout it out. It is also a Wu-Tang Wednesday here on Joe Lowenditz, 95.7 The Game. Your upcoming guests, who all appear via the Dialpad guest line, Tim Roy at 8:30, Mark Spears at 9:05. All right, before we get into the Steph Curry audio, this is going to be your first opportunity to have a chance to win tickets to Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, for those of you who are calling in right now, hang up. There is no call-in. We've been trying to explain this. I'm going to do a better job right now. Four times today, we are going to announce the name of a Warrior player, past or present. You need to collect these four names, all right? The times the names will be announced are coming up in just a few seconds will be number one. The second time will be 11:30 with Steiny and Guru. The third time will be at 2:30 p.m. with Papa and Bonte. And then at 5:30 p.m. on the Dame and Bruce Show. Those are the four times that names will be announced. Collect those four names. And then tomorrow at 7:30 right here, we'll tell you what to do with them. That's how you win the tickets. So calling right now is not going to help. The first name you need to know. I feel like I need a drum roll for this, please. O'Donnell Foyle. O'Donnell Foyle. Do nothing. Don't call. Don't text. Just remember the name. You need the four names. The first of the four names is O'Donnell Foyle. The next name will be coming at 11:30, then 2:30, then 5:30. Once you have all four, report back here tomorrow morning at 7:30, and we will tell you what to do, and boom, you will have a chance to go to Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Whew, it's a lot. A lot for a contest.
Should be.
It's a page of documents.
It's a big prize. You got to have a big contest for a big prize. Last game in the history of Oracle Arena, possible win to force a Game 7, or what would be dreaded would be a Toronto celebration.
All right. Steph Curry, meeting with the media after Game 5. I want you to take a listen to this audio because we're going to discuss it for the next few minutes.
I mean, we've made a lot of different statements over the course of these 5 years. And win or lose, I don't feel like we need to prove anything anymore. It's just about can we get the job done or not. And obviously, like I said, tonight was an emotional roller coaster from start to finish. And we have another game to play on Thursday, so we'll be ready for it. But there's no more statements need to be made about who we are as a team and our heart and our competitiveness and whatnot. We want to win this championship. We're going to give everything we got, but I think we're done with, you know, proving people wrong or making bold statements with our play. People know who we are.
Agree or disagree with that? There are a lot of haters out there. A lot of people saying it might not be a dynasty if you don't win three in a row. Always people looking to tear down those who are at the top. But do you agree or disagree with Steph Curry?
I agree with him to the extent that they have nothing left to prove, especially after what they did in Game 5, coming back after the Kevin Durant re-injury and still winning that ball game. If they lose in six and they don't ever win the title again, maybe they never make the NBA Finals again as this collection of guys, you'll still look back and see three titles in 5 years, and you can compare it as you go back. San Antonio had a great run. Of course, you had the three-peat of the Lakers, and you go as you go back, this run would stand alongside many of those other runs.
Do you think they have anything left to prove to anybody? For the haters that are out there, are they just simply hating for the sense of hating without any real rationale to back it up?
No, I don't think they have anything else to prove. I think that Steph's right. He said, we're going to go out here and we're going to play to win. And we're going to play hard and we're going to give everything we got. And I love these guys because you don't hear all these guys say, oh, if KD's healthy, if Boogie Cousins healthy, this wouldn't happen. They're out there just playing. They're like, next man up. They're strength in numbers. And they're not making they're not complaining. They're not doing a lot of lip service. They're not pointing the finger at any other guy being hurt. All they are doing is sticking together and finding a way to compete. When the odds are against them, the true odds, I think the true odds should have always been against them this year, especially when the NBA Finals. I don't know why I think so many people, this perception about this Warrior team, they overlooked reality that Toronto has beaten them, that Toronto has a better record. People have overlooked that Kawhi is pretty good. They got big men. They can play defense. Everyone overlooked and said, the Warriors are a foregone conclusion. I think that they missed this. This Warrior team, what they have done and the way in which they fought, Joe, has been unbelievable. I totally agree with Steph Curry and the way he laid that out. And we sit here and we say we want to throw dirt on them moving forward. To me, right now, there's a lot of teams in the West. But they're not good enough right now. Take KD out of the equation right now. They beat the Rockets. Yeah, I know it was a small sample size, but the Rockets, do they scare you without KD? Did you look at all the different teams, the Lakers? Look at all the teams that are around right now. Look at Denver. Look at all these teams. Do they just tell you right now, next year, is it a foregone conclusion? Right now, even without KD, in the West, I think the Warriors right now, you would still have to have them favored in the West, even without KD.
They are at the moment. You're talking about for next season?
Yeah.
They're the favorite to win the title as of right now at virtually every sports book. They are. It's not as great of a divide as it has been in the past. And clearly free agency will probably shake some things up over the next few weeks. But as it stands right now, odds to win the 2019-2020 championship, they are your favorite. Not as big as they've been in the past, but they are still your favorite. Curry's comments, it depends. What's he talking about in terms of what needs to be proven? That they're great? We know they're great. If the question is how great, there's still more to prove. Do you want to go down as the greatest team of all time? Because you haven't proven that. Do you want to go down as the greatest dynasty, as the greatest five-year stretch of all time? Then there's still something left to prove. I don't believe there's anything left for them to prove at all unless they're trying to stack up with their place in history. Because their current place in history, this recent history, no one's better. They go down as one of the all-time greats. They go down as one of the all-time great runs that we've seen. One of the all-time great collections of talent. One of the all-time great teams. But if you are trying to be the best of all time, if you want people to look back 75 years from now and say, who was the greatest five-year stretch team in the NBA's history? You still have something left to prove. Because this is possibly the greatest challenge you've ever faced. Of all of them, when have you ever needed to come back from as much adversity? Let's go through the years. Year number one, you faced that bump in the road against Memphis, and you acquitted yourselves nicely. You got to the finals, you fell down 2-1. Still the favorite to win those games. Go back and look at the point spread in those games. Vegas wasn't saying Cleveland was going to win that thing. The perception shifted a little bit, but the idea was still that the Warriors were the better team and they were going to right this ship, which is what they did. They were the favorite pretty much the entire way through the second year, the 73-win season, not only to win the title, but in those games against Cleveland. I believe there was one game in that series in which they were dogs, and I think it was a do or die for Cleveland where Draymond was suspended. You come back the next year with Durant when they won every game but one. They weren't facing an underdog role. And then last year, similar situation. They got down 3-2 against Houston, and people started to turn the tide, but Chris Paul got hurt. Do you remember that? He got hurt when they went up 3-2, and everyone said, well, we caught that break. They're still going to win. This is the furthest you've been viewed as a dog by Vegas to win the title, to win the series, in the entire existence of this run. There is a narrative. I'm not saying I believe in this narrative, but there is a narrative that the Warriors are front runners. That when the Warriors are out in front, nobody in the business can stop them. It's like Tiger Woods back in the day. There's this great stat about Tiger when he's leading on Sunday going into a major. He had gone forever without blowing the lead until what? It was the U.S. Open. Y.E. Yang was the first guy to come back on him on
in
a
the
Sunday.
PGA, yeah.
That was the PGA?
Yep.
First time he had ever blown a Sunday lead at a major. That's what people view the Warriors as. When they're out in front of you, you cannot come back on them. Obviously, the Cleveland years is something there, but there's the suspension that's still used as an argument that no one can come back on them. But when they're trailing, when they're down, very difficult for them to come back. Now, again, I'm not saying I subscribe to that narrative, but that narrative does exist, that they're great from a front-running perspective, but much like Woods, having to come back from 3-4 shots down entering Sunday, you didn't see that all that often. Woods was always great from in front, wasn't necessarily the best in the business when it came to playing from behind. Doesn't diminish your greatness, right, but when right. you're talking about if there's anything left to prove, the ability to come back from a significant gap, a significant talent gap, a significant series score gap, a significant perception gap, a significant Vegas odds gap. This is your opportunity to prove it. This is your opportunity to prove it.
Go ahead, Lo.
No, and that's why I think that Klay Thompson, if you heard his audio, he said, hey, look, we're a very good team. He said, with Kevin Durant, we're a great team, one of the greatest teams that's ever probably been assembled. And I agree with that. I've seen this team fight through adversity. You talked about it, Dibs, when they were OKC. 3-1, found a way to come back. So you've seen them from behind, you've seen them from in front, but this injury is pretty big for them to overcome, in my opinion.
It's massive, but you can still go out and win in the game six scenario. The game is at home, and I believe they're still, what, 3-point favorites?
Correct.
Even though you don't have Kevin Durant, and you've had your backs against the wall, you're still favored at home, so it's not a wild stretch to think that you could win Game six. Vegas is telling you that it really is a pickup kind of or a pick 'em kind of game if you're the home team. I don't know if it works 3 points in the NBA, but I'm sure home court, maybe not in this series, but normally it's worth a few points to the spread. So
yeah, it's actually an advantage to play on the road in this series.
Yes, Warriors would be favored by 5 if the game was in Toronto, maybe. But you look at the rosters talent wise, and Vegas is telling you it's a coin toss. So you win this game at home in front of what should be the most emotionally charged crowd ever in the last game at Oracle. Then you look ahead to Sunday and think, 48 minutes. We know that anything can happen. You know it from a football game. The oblong ball bounces one way instead of the other.
Yeah.
1 yard here, 1 yard there. You never know. So you look at it from the sense of, this game is a very winnable game six, and all of a sudden this team could be alongside some of the true greats of all time, because you have to go back to the Boston Celtics. Last time a team even appeared in 5 straight finals.
This instantly, if you come back to win this, this instantly becomes the greatest of all the championship runs. I don't even think it's close. What else would stack up against it from the previous 4 years? The first run from a sentimental standpoint, yeah. But, you know, the Cavs lost Kyrie and Kevin Love in that series. The second one you lost. The third one was an utter blowout.
16-1.
Right. So, I mean, you could look at that and say that's the most impressive, simply because they laid waste to the entire NBA in that postseason. Or you could even look at the following year where they came back from 3-1 down against Houston,
right.
3-2 down against Houston, and then smashed the Cavs in a sweep. You could make those cases from an entertainment standpoint, maybe not. From a dominant standpoint, yes. But if you come back from the injuries, the drama, the war of attrition, the fact that it's just bloody bodies trying to carry themselves to the finish line of this Ironman, because we've seen these Ironmans in Hawaii where the person passes out with like 75 yards to go and they're just crawling to the finish line. That's what this is. This would be the ultimate nail in the coffin for anyone who's ever tried to disparage the run. This comeback, this would have to go down as the greatest of all the runs.
I was thinking about the greatest finals comeback in whatever memory. How far back would you have to go to think about an NBA finals that would be this improbable to come back from 3-1 down after losing?
Unfortunately, the Cavs.
You know, yeah, it's true. But at least in that one, you look at the Warriors, you had the glue guy suspended and you had Steph Curry who was hobbled. So even looking at that, it's impressive. And I'm not trying to take it away because they came from 3-1 down, but this one, to me, would be a more impressive comeback from 3-1 down, because you'd be going up against a Toronto team that I think is better than that Cavs team.
And you got Draymond back, so you had a chance to right the ship.
Right.
Draymond, it wasn't like when he got suspended, all of a sudden that was a game that determined the series. They missed that game, Cavs won. Then they had to play them again.
In Cleveland, Cavs won again.
With Draymond. So, I think this is... Because, of, like you talked about, the pure attrition. You have Looney, friggin' don't know if he's going to play. You have KD. Friggin', you have a guy that's coming off of torn quad, torn Achilles, and Cousins.
Any other year, the Klay Thompson thing, we'd be monitoring this by the minute. It's not like he's healthy. It's not like all of a sudden the hamstring's good.
Right.
We would be monitoring this by the minute.
Absolutely.
We don't even talk about it anymore. It just happened last week.
The amount of injuries that they have, I've never seen it. And you go through, and it'd be hard. Yeah, I remember Boston Celtics here. You had a couple of guy hurt. But for the amount that they have in key positions and glue guys and sir, this has been a freaking unbelievable what the Warriors have been able to go through, just a battle of attrition.
Is this the most you've ever doubted them over this five-year run?
It is.
I'm trying to go back to think of all the times where you had to question whether or not they could do it. And you had to think about it for a little bit against Memphis. There was some concern there. I remember going in that thinking, man, what a great regular season to let that get away from you.
But
here.
You questioned their
heart. Then they quietly came back.
But that Memphis, you're like, dude, what's going on? Because you knew they should have beaten them. So you question, God, are they tough enough? That was who are the Warriors. We were finding out who the Warriors. That was them trying to be. They're the young Mike Tyson trying to see who are this team really are they. I think now you're questioning because now you're not questioning their heart anymore. That game against Memphis, they're down. You think, oh, my God, what's going on? You knew that they were a far better team than Memphis, but you didn't. You questioned their heart. Now, this series, you're not questioning their heart. You're not questioning that at all. You're questioning, man, do they just have enough?
The talent, you're questioning whether or not they have enough. I think the most doubt I had up until now would be the Cleveland series in the finals because, to your point about Memphis.
That first year?
Yes. Yes, we didn't know that they were going to be champions yet. So the Memphis series, it scared you. That was more of Styles making fights because Memphis slowed it down. They played such great D.
Right.
You were concerned about Mike Conley Jr. You were wondering if they could get over the hump. Against Cleveland, you hadn't yet stopped LeBron James. You didn't know you were going to play him four straight years and beat him three of those four. So when LeBron was going off and Cleveland was up 2-1, I remember at that moment thinking, man, this Warrior team, maybe they don't have enough to get by LeBron James.
What about OKC?
Kyrie
always leave OKC out because they didn't win the title that year. I have a tough time taking myself back to that. I could take myself back to that Cleveland series, but being down 3-2 against OKC, I don't necessarily remember how much I was questioning that. I think I had come to grips with the fact that if it doesn't work out, OKC's a great team. That one does not stand out as much as everything else.
Maybe because they had two of the three at home in that series. Because they split the first two, then they go to OKC and they lost both home games, which was the first time they had lost both home games in a playoff, or both road games in a playoff series. So they came home down 3-1, but you still felt like they had two of the three at home. If they could just find a way to steal that game six, which they did in Claymaker fashion, you still felt pretty good, I think, having two games at home.
I always remember the Bill Walton speech right before that game. Do you remember that? He had this huge speech right before, I think it was on Papa's show. He had this whole thing about trying to get everybody motivated to go out there, and it was just the craziest thing ever. And I can't remember if it was right before the Claymaker or game set, or I think it was right before the Claymaker, but it was phenomenal.
This is Bill, not Luke?
This is Bill.
Yeah.
He had some good speeches.
Wow.
Yeah, Bill's great.
He is awesome. But with the Cavs, though, that first series, yeah, you knew you had the LeBron mystique. But you also, once Kyrie went down, didn't you kind of like exhale, like, okay, even on that first?
I'm not the best one to ask about this because I was dealing with a whole lot of personal stuff there.
I had the
Warriors 30-1, so like there was the emotion of not hedging, and then there was the whole Cleveland banner thing where like the whole city was trying to get me, and I was like, man, I just need to get out of this series just to avoid that scrutiny. So there's a whole lot of personal BS I was trying to get through.
So that was
all self-inflicted.
That was your first year on radio then, right? In 2015. So you
started Monday, December 8th.
Oh my God.
It was the day after the Raiders beat the Niners at the Coliseum. And that was our first day on. And that was the first season. So that was when they were down 2-1.
Oh, yeah.
I think I still remember to this day believing they were going to win that series because of the injuries to Cleveland. But there was so much other nonsense going on with all that. I remember it being very emotional. I remember it being very stressed.
Going a lot.
I don't remember as much stress with OKC, and I certainly don't remember as much stress with Houston last year because even though it was 3-2, with Chris Paul going down, I remember coming into the studio being like, you're down 3-2, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like you're up 3-1 and the series is done because there's no Chris Paul, and he had been playing so big in that series. I remember doubting it a hell of a lot more just a few weeks ago against Houston. I did not think they were going to come back to win that series. That was probably the most I had doubted them until this point. And at this point, I'm not going to say completely written them off. 95% I've written them off. And I'm just pure honesty. Not trying to get people riled up. I have very little confidence they win game six. I am stunned that they're even a favorite. And I do not see them winning either of the next two games. And if I end up being wrong, happy to admit it.
Me too.
But if you're going to rank the feeling of confidence, how much you've doubted them over the last 5 years, this is the most doubt. This is the absolute most doubt. Only slightly above Houston just a few weeks ago. It's both been this season.
So your doubtometer, and I'd love to hear people, 888-957-9570, your doubtometer is. This is the maximum doubt you've had in this Warrior team.
Not even close. Yeah.
I'm 75, and
it's not one of these things where
95.
It's like, hey, who do you like with the spread in game six? I don't even need the spread. Like, if I'm not trying to pander to anybody, and I'm asked honestly, what do you think about game six? Raptor money line. And I'm not, and it's not even like, I kind of lean to it. I don't love it like the national anthem. Really like it. That's where I'm at. I'm trying to figure out, and I've been trying to find ways to build the case for the Warriors. But here's the problem. And this is something I talk about with other guys time and time again when it comes up with gambling. Numbers versus narrative, right? What's the narrative? Because it's easy to get sucked into these narratives, and a lot of times there's no truth to it.
Especially as the local team, you know? We're more privy to being sucked into the narrative than anyone, and I more than anyone as a Warrior fan, so.
Here's an example. Here's something like, oh, home teams, Monday Night Football, that's a great situation. And then you go back and you look at the spreads, it's like, no, it's 50-50. I'm not saying that's the case, but you get caught up in narratives. There are a lot of narratives out there when it comes to pro sports, college sports as well, that some of them hold true when you really dive into the numbers, some of them do not. Oh, it's a bounce back spot. They're absolutely going to bounce back, and then they don't. And it turns out, no, teams don't bounce back. Like, teams don't bounce back in that spot. So you have to sort through all the noise. The narrative is what's carrying the Golden State angle here. That's what troubles me. That the two biggest pieces of information that people give me when it comes to why do you believe the Warriors are going to win game six? The first thing I hear is they're going to win it for KD. Okay, I like the emotion of that, but I'm not sure how much logic and rationality is rooted in that statement. You want to win it for KD. I can completely understand that. Does that matter? Like that implies they're going to be more emotional. Toronto's playing for a championship. I'm pretty sure they're going to be emotional too. I'm not sure you have an edge there. The second narrative, well, it's the final game ever at Oracle. Okay? We also knew last Friday could have been the final game ever at Oracle, and they got crushed. So I'm not sure I can put a lot of faith in that. Again, it's not to make anyone feel bad, but those are the narratives. When you get inside the numbers and you ask yourself, all right, analytically or just from a scouting X's and O's perspective, who's better? Well, I've seen two games at Oracle. Both games have been won by Toronto. Both spreads have been covered by Toronto. They've won those games by a combined 27 points. Okay? That's daunting. I saw a really nice performance from the Warriors early in game five, courtesy of Kevin Durant. He went down. That game played out to a Raptor advantage the rest of the way. Warriors still won by one, but remember, they had to knock down 23 pointers in that game, way above their season average. They shot close to, what, 50% from three-point range, way above their season average. Conversely, Toronto hit 8 three-pointers, their season average is 12, and they shot 25% from deep, their season average is 36. Like, regression to the mean, Toronto's going to shoot better, Golden State's going to shoot worse. All that advantage from three, they still only won by one. So I lay all of that out, plus the way in which Toronto's gotten balance from a lot of their starters, plus the way Boogie, well, he's played well in two games, both on the road, hasn't played well at Oracle, he's hit or miss. You know, now you don't have to worry about Kevin Durant, so Steph's not going to get the open looks he was getting early in game five. And I stack all that up and I say to myself, I it's tough to find the reason to get behind the Warriors in game six outside of these narratives of, yeah, win one for KD or it's the last game at Oracle. That's where I'm at. That's why when you ask me in terms of having doubted them between now and the last 5 years, where does this rank? This clearly ranks at the top by a wide margin. And my doubtometer, if that's what we're calling it, 95% to the Raptors. And I hate to do that. I don't take pleasure in it. I don't enjoy it. But if I'm going to be honest, that's where I'm at right now. The Raptors are a very good basketball team. And that's what history is going to look back on. There's too much noise around Golden State. There's too much noise. It's an injury here, an injury there, chaos. Toronto just blew game five at home. It was gift wrap for them. They blew it, and the story was Durant and who was to blame for him being on the court. That's not good for the Warriors. The Raptors are in a situation where they should be facing heat from the media. Nick Nurse, in any other year, is facing a ton of heat for that decision to call that timeout there. Kawhi Leonard didn't play big in that first half. He's facing heat. All the noise being generated by Golden State is allowing the Raptors to avoid the criticism that a lot of teams in their situation face. It has been a huge benefit to take on the Warriors in this series. A huge benefit because they're making all the noise and drawing all the ire of the media.
They are. And this is a this is tough because you see the Warriors and what they've been able to fight through and all the adversity surrounding this team, especially in the playoffs. And it's been exciting. And it's been very, very exciting. And this is that David and Goliath story, that do they have one more? Can they find a stone to be able to knock down the giant? They're no longer the giant. Who would have thought, who would have thunk that we'd be sitting here saying that the Warriors are not the giant? And it's Toronto. They're bigger, stronger. And you look at this, and I'm not as far as the puncher's chance. So I'm at 75% Toronto that they close this thing out. And then I think whether it's this game or the next game, I'm in the same church. I don't give it as high as a 95 because if they do something miraculous, does it surprise you because of their pedigree? They just find a way, and I don't think they have enough. I think that their cupboards are bare, Dan. I think that you have too many injuries. Don't know if Looney's going to be able to give you the minutes that he's been able to. You look at this guy, how he went down, and then you're going to have to turn to Jordan Bell. Is Bell now going to play? You saw, even though we said, okay, they're going to go to more Bogut. Bogut played 2 minutes. Looney played four. So Jordan Bell played four. So, yeah, we know that Bogut's a better player, more fundamentally sound. There's a reason why Kerr went with Bell for 4 minutes instead of Andrew. So he's going to have to shake up different lineups. He's got to get minutes from someone. And where do you go? So it is. This is a tall task for this Warrior team. Do they have enough emotional? Do they have enough emotional energy? Can it sustain? I know they're going to come out hard and play, but is it sustainable? They cannot put this team away. When you see Toronto has put them away, one by 14, one by double digits several times. The Warriors have never been able to put them away in a sound way where you say, wow, the Warriors dominated that game.
You don't need to put a team away as long as you have more points than them at the end of the ball game. And I think what Joe laid out and what you laid out, they're all solid points. And I look at other factors that maybe go beyond the box score. One thing that we saw against Toronto in game five was a certain amount of pucker factor late in that ball game. They didn't make plays. They didn't make shots. They did not do what needed to be done to win the championship because only one or two players, rather, have championship pedigree, Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. And Danny Green has been god-awful, and he's been trending toward not necessarily playing better. And I think the intangibility of playing in front of the home crowd at Oracle is critical. And again, for this Warrior team and the Warrior crowd, to Joe's point about them being front runners, I think in games they tend to be front runners. You watch these playoff games that the Warriors win, they tend to be up early, they tend to build on it. And put the Portland series aside because that was light work. They were flicking the jab against Portland. I know they fell behind three times by more than 16 points, but the way that the Warriors tend to win games, especially at home, is build an early lead, keep the crowd in it, withstand the push from the other team, and hold on and execute from the foul line. And I think that template can work in Game 6 in a one-off scenario, especially if Kawhi Leonard doesn't get the same support that he's been getting from Gasol, from Siakam, who had a little bit of a rough game in Game 5. So I think the margin is a lot closer than it otherwise would be.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to the 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Tim Roy is going to join us at 8:30 on the Dial Pad guest line. All guests appear on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video messages, and meetings across existing devices. Mark Spears will join us on the Dial Pad guest line as well around 9:05. Warriors-Raptors Game 6 tomorrow night, Oracle Arena, the final game in that iconic building's history. Tip time, 6:05 p.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. Dibs, you made an interesting point. Toronto's pucker factor, you called it. late in the game against Golden State. They went on that run. They called timeout. The Warriors got hot late, found a way to win. Some would argue Toronto found a way to lose. Either way, the Warriors survive and advance to a Game 6 tomorrow night at Oracle. What's the likelihood the moment becomes too big tomorrow night, and then in addition to that, in Game 7 on Sunday? Because that's part of what's going to help the Warriors get back in this thing if they're going to get back in it.
I think much more likely that it happens tomorrow as opposed to Game 7 on Sunday, because if you're Toronto and you get into a Game 7 scenario at home, there's a sense of just letting it rip because you are staring down the barrel of possibly being the second team ever to blow a 3-1 lead.
Even after losing games 5 and 6.
I think so.
More pucker factor tomorrow than
game 7. I think so, yeah, because there's that sense of if you don't close it out now, then what happens in game 7? I think game 7, 48 minutes, you just throw the records out and you go out and play. Right now, if you're Toronto, you're just trying to protect this thing. You're trying to avoid putting yourself in that situation of one game to settle it all. You've got the Warriors down, but not quite out. I think there's a lot of pressure, especially early in the game tomorrow, for Toronto to come out strong and sort of put the Warriors away and take the crowd out of it. The longer the crowd hangs in tomorrow, the longer the Warriors hang in, the more Toronto, I think, starts to pucker up.
You've been in these big spots before.
Yeah, you better bring your big boy pads tomorrow. I know it's basketball and it's not a game of contact, but I'll tell you right now, Kawhi Leonard is going to be aggressive from the jump. He can't sleep. He's chomping at the bit. This guy, if I'm a competitor and I've been in that situation, I'm looking at my guys in there. Kawhi doesn't say much. That's the one that said, that's on me. That was on him. Bottom line, he was not forceful in that first half. The guy wasn't on the gas. He wasn't aggressive. I'm telling you right now, he's going to get to the line at least 10 times. He's going to create fouls. He is going to be a man with his hair on fire tomorrow night because he didn't show up. Yeah, he had that 10-point and he did great. That was awesome. But I'm telling you, Kawhi Leonard, what he did in that first half, didn't do much. Didn't do much. And Siakam's going to play a lot better. A lot better. They're going to be a lot more aggressive. And I just don't know if the Warriors have enough to sustain it. Because they're going to start off hard. It's just, you see it. They just, at the end, it's just, this Toronto team just keeps the pressure on them and they don't fall far behind.
How do you defend Leonard then? Because here's where this is going to get really interesting. I'm going to give you the amount that Toronto's scoring with Leonard against different Warrior defenders per 100 possessions. A lot of people don't know what that means. When you throw that in, it's, well, they're scoring this many per 100 possessions. Well, why do you say that? It's a way to standardize or normalize scoring averages across different styles of basketball. For example, if you just look at how many points does Sacramento score a game? Sacramento scores a lot. How many points does Orlando score a game? Orlando scores a little. Does that make Sacramento a better offense? No, they just move at a faster pace and they get more shots up, which leads to more points. But Orlando could be just as competitive, if not better, while scoring fewer points because they slow down the tempo. Defense is rooted in that. So what they do now is they average it over 100 possessions. So if every team has 100 possessions, how many points would they score? It's a better indicator for offensive success. Draymond Green has marked up against Kawhi Leonard 65 times in this postseason. 65 times. Toronto is averaging per 100 possessions 147.7 points. That is horrible. Draymond Green, when on Kawhi Leonard, is getting absolutely worked. Isn't to take a shot at Draymond Green. It's just to highlight the fact that when Green is on Leonard, it's a problem. And you saw it at the beginning of the third quarter in game 4. Remember when Kawhi forced the turnover on Draymond, pushed it down the court, pulled up right in his face and buried that 3, and then it was a quick timeout? As Toronto hit those 2 threes, 6 points, turned a 4-point deficit into a 2-point lead. Like that. Like that. Meanwhile, Klay Thompson on Kawhi Leonard. 90 matchups this series. Toronto averaging 97 points per 100 possessions. So it falls from 147 per 100 to 97. It's a 50-point decrease from Draymond to Klay. So naturally you'd say to yourself, let's get more Klay Thompson on Kawhi Leonard. Sounds great. Who's going to score for the Warriors? Because that's the situation you're in right now without Kevin Durant. You know Steph can get him up. You also know without Durant, they're going to be able to focus more on Steph. They've got a pretty good defensive game plan there. But if Klay is going to be putting that much energy on Leonard to try and limit him, that's great because defense matters. 50% of the game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.